I hope, however, that time was spent, that it, there was a nurturing quality to it. And before we met, just to, if you feel like it, just take a moment to look at our beautiful Sangha, take in each other's faces or these beautiful images that people have that I love seeing. This is a way of checking in as if we were in actual live time together, but just let's take in our Sangha just for a moment. Both pages, names, pictures, faces, images, you know, here we are. It's, for me, it's, there's a real homecoming on these Thursdays. I've been part of this group almost, it's like 18 years. So this Thursday morning, in whatever time zone I'm in, is always a homecoming for me. And it's just a delight to be back with y'all. That said, when you feel ready, I invite you to close your eyes. And again, just letting yourself reconnect or to connect to this body of ours, to ourselves. There's so much that pulls us outside of ourselves. And one of the gifts we have of being able to sit together in Sangha and this closing of the eyes and kind of turning towards ourselves, saying hello. Again, if it's helpful, hand to the heart, hand to the belly, just as a way of starting the practice, we hold ourselves, feeling the ground beneath us, the heavens above, as we take our seats as daughters of the Buddha, sitting in a circle, stretching across state lines, time zones, national borders, oceans. It's remarkable. And allowing yourself to take your seat here in the sense of welcome and belonging. And for the anchor of our sit today, I'd like to play with the water element. Having just spent about 7 days on the Salmon River in Idaho, which I might talk about later. But for now, to imagine, if it's helpful, calling to mind an image of a river, a mountain creek or stream, or the ocean, a moving body of water, whether there's a visual of a real place or just an imagined beautiful river, stream, ocean. Imagine us sitting together beside this water, body of water, in this flow that happens, right? This, the water can move mountains, it carves valleys, right? Canyons. But this beautiful power of water that flows over rocks and trees and debris of all sorts, it just keeps going. This body of ours is made up of, I think, 78-80% water. The brain, I think, is 82%. These aren't quite right. There's a lot of water in our fathom long form here. And being able to connect with this sense of flow that moves through the body, the blood, right? The carrying of oxygen through the system, the movement of fluids. Again, aligning ourselves with this, the visible water element in the natural world. Yeah. So it is externally, so it is within each of us. Ruth King writes so beautifully about the parallels or the expressions of equanimity through the elements. So this flow of water, this incredible power of the flowing nature of water abides within us. So the equanimity of flow and movement, can we imagine or feel into that within our own system? In this body of ours, we can feel the water element in our, the saliva in our mouth, or the moisture in our eyes. Imagining the flow of blood and other fluids through the body, again, as is helpful to hold that image in the mind's eye of a mountain stream, a creek, a flowing river, the movement of the waves, aligning ourselves with the sense of flow. That is our birthright, right? And for the sit today, we're just going to stay with this one element if it feels helpful. If it doesn't, don't worry. You could do another practice like following the breath. But to try it on, how is it to hold the image again of moving water as it is externally, as it is within? The mind will do what it does, having opinions, judgments, stories, deciding it has other things to do. Okay, that's what the mind does. Not to worry about it. And when we can, just reorient the attention. Oh, can I abide in this flowing nature of the water element in this body? Abide in the visual, the imaginal sense of the flowing river or creek in the mind's eye, allowing there to be this blending. What's happening in the external world, what's happening within our own form. We are not separate. That's easy to say. Yeah, we have all kinds of boundaries and things that prevent us from naturally feeling that sense of connection for many of us. So just how is it in this moment to set down old patterns and ideas and to allow ourselves to align with this primal force of water? Yeah. We were all, this is what we formed in, right? The fluids in our mother's womb. Water is our first element, I might say. And again, just noting the mind will do what it does. And then when we catch it, oh, right. Can I come back to noting the water element, imagining the flow, the feel of the motion in our own body? We're just holding that image in the mind's eye, if it's helpful. Remembering there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, and we see how it is in this particular moment and then in the next. And to almost cherish those moments of, oh, I got lost in thought or lost in a judgment or in an opinion or comparing mind or making lists, because that's a moment of enlightenment. Oh, yeah, we wake up. Can I come back? Feeling into the flow, the absence of flow. Right, it's the same. Again, if it's helpful, holding that image of a mountain stream, a flowing river, the movement of the ocean. Letting yourself just abide there. With full acceptance that there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, we see how it is. And I'm just so grateful we can sit together on this 29th day of June. So nice, as always, to sit together. As I mentioned in the instructions last week, I got off the river. I was on the Middle Fork of the Salmon River in Idaho for about 6 days, whitewater rafting with three of my siblings, one of my college roommates, and my niece. And it's the last 3 years I've done trips like this, basically just sort of out in wilderness. The first year was on a mountain bike in Utah, and the last 2 years on the river. And they've been a form of retreat for me. Last year's, as some of you know, I was with Heidi Bourne, who subs in on the Wednesday class, and it was an intentional mindfulness and rafting trip. And this last one didn't have that moniker, but just by virtue of the trip of being on a river, floating down through amazing canyons and in the designated wilderness, it was very much of a form of retreat for me. One of the values, of course, is just no screens for 7 days. And I want to talk some about that experience, but really to look at how, let me rephrase it or jump in. There's a line by John O'Donohue that many of you have heard of, I want to live as the river does, surprised by its own unfolding. And several times a day, that quote would come up as literally, I had no idea where the river was going to go. And sometimes there was flat water, and sometimes there was, you know, class 4 or 5 rapids. And how to sort of stay with a sense of equanimity. And what was so beautiful about the geology and geography is there's the earth element of these amazing canyons or trees, the earth element, and then the water element, and then there'd be some really scary times. And the guides, in order, I think, to get our attention the first 2 days, told us every horror story that was possible. You get your foot stuck, basically you're going to die, don't do that. And you could die this way, and then the boat could flip, and you could die that way. And the river water temperature is 42 degrees, and, you know, it's hailing. And so we were all fundamentally scared in the beginning, and then working with it. Yeah. And thinking, you know, this morning, a poem that I read with some regularity by Alison Luderman, even the word obstacle is the obstacle. And there's a line in that poem of, if it's in the way, it is the way. And so often, at least I know in my own life and in raising my 15-year-old, the sense of like, I just want it to be easy. Like, why can't things work out for more than like a day? But like, extendedly, can they work out? And I think all of us probably have times in our lives like, things did work out. And then I know some of us have shared, and it's like, oh my God, it doesn't work out. Like the relentlessness of these waves, that it's like, oh my God, whether it's illnesses or financial struggles or issues with our beloveds and health and death, and right, it's just going to be relentless. And this is how it is. This is this life, this first noble truth of, in this human realm, there is suffering. Dukkha, which can be so beautifully translated as stress, as disappointment, as suffering, as struggle. Things don't work out often how we want them to. And through these teachings, we get this amazing opportunity to look at the fabrications of the mind. Like, I want it to be like this. I have expectations it'll be like that. Sometimes it works out that way. Often it doesn't. And being able, through our practice, noticing, oh, the mind has a lot of ideas. And my experience on the river, one, I didn't know a lot about what was going to happen, but there was such a reality to this water, this rock does this, pay attention and hold on. And this sort of living this really lovely metaphor of when it's calm and when it's not. And it was when we sit retreat, sort of the third day in is when things kind of settle down. This first 3 days, the first day in particular, oftener describes kind of a train wreck. We kind of bring all our momentum of our lives, and then we're supposed to sit and be quiet and be still. There's a form of that on this river trip. And so the third day kind of had that magical turning point. And not to maybe overshare, but one of the days it had been raining and it was hailing, and we're setting up our, taking down our tents and standing around freezing and getting the water that's freezing, and we paddle and it's freezing, and then the sun comes out and we're like, oh, amazing. And we paddle along in the sun for a bit, and we've been told we're going to come to an amazing a waterfall. It's called Vail Falls, and you park, pull the boats in, hike up this path that's going more for mountain goats than humans. And then all of a sudden you come to this cave, and over the lip of the cave is this waterfall. And I'd never really seen a waterfall like this, because the droplets were so clear, as opposed to sort of being this gushing force, and the wind would blow and the water would move. It was very alive and amazing. And someone had the idea, like, go stand under it. And each one of us in turn went down. The guides later were like, in 1,000 years, we never would have guessed that anyone would stand under it, given how cold we had been. But it was a real, in a way, incredible baptism by flow to stand under this waterfall in this pool of water that so clearly went down into the river, and this motion, feeling such a part of this motion of the water coming down, this blessing through. And I just found myself standing under it, made me tear up. Just was like, let go, let go, let go, let go. Allow the water to carry whatever the burdens that I was carrying for each of us on this trip. Let it go, let it go. Which can be such a trite saying, oh, let it go. But in my experience under that waterfall, it was more a sense, can I allow myself to be in a process of this water moving through? That it's not letting go into nothingness. There's a release into a flow of how life is unfolding. You know, the literal waterfall on my head running down into the river was, again, sort of living this metaphor of, oh, there's such a fluid process happening that is our life force. Can I align myself with that life force, with an awesomeness of the, really the majesty of the water? It was undeniable. Okay, can I just stand under and allow this to be carried through? On a different one of those days, we had this great guy named Pella, and the water's kind of bending through, and the water divides, and there was sort of a, basically, these are my words, not the proper geologic words, was like there's like a pebble island that divided the river. And our guide is like, oh, that's an that what's happening with those river rocks is known as imbrication, imbrication. And the way the water works, and some of you may know this, that the water realigns those stones to all face the same direction and to be as smooth as possible. When looking up imbrication, an example of a different kind of imbrication or another example of it is like fish gills or roof tiles, how they kind of overlap, but there's a flow and ease. But coming back to the example on this river of how these stone, the pebbles, which were big, all aligned themselves in the flow, the direction of the water. And over time, they've all become smooth because that was the path of least resistance for the water. And it was such a, again, this striking metaphor of, oh, when we allow ourselves to align with the flow of life, it gets easier because we've put down the fight. The river doesn't arrange rocks, so it's constantly butting up against it, right? That's a waste of energy, right? So the river can sort itself out so that it moves through with the least resistance. And how so many times in this class talking about, we put down the fight, you know, the second, third arrow, suffering happens, something happens, we get sick, someone we love dies, things don't work out. Then we can heap on all this judgment of, I messed up and it's my fault and I'm to blame or they're to blame or someone's to blame and it's not okay. We can fall into a victim place of fighting. This isn't right. It's a lot of energy. It's a lot of energy that doesn't provide much benefit, right? Much like if the river arranged the rocks around so it was constantly almost like a dam. It doesn't do that. It aligns it so if there's a path of most ease. So with this teachings of Buddhist practice of insight and understanding, bringing clarity and wisdom to noting the conditioned patterns of the mind, therein lies a choice. Is this habit of the mind of going and fighting how things are? I want it to be otherwise. Why isn't it otherwise? Whose fault is it that it is not otherwise? Why hasn't this worked out? Whatever this is, right? That's a lot of energy. We're kind of living in a culture that's like, that shouldn't, there's ways that you can do things better, whether it's your fault or somebody else's fault, or you should be better. All these ways that we can be acculturated into, we're not enough, we're not good enough, our life isn't good enough. And again, coming back to this image of the water being like, this is, I'm going to create a path of least resistance for the flow to be able to move. And for us, like, how can we align ourselves? This is what's happening. We may like it or not like it. In this place of equanimity, oh, it's just like this. I always want to be really clear. It's not about becoming a doormat. Oh, it's just like this, whatever, I'll just give up. We absolutely hold on to the discernment rooted in wisdom that can allow us to make choices from a responsive place as opposed to reactive. Yeah. So it's a settling in, like, oh, this is how it is in my life or in the world. And I said, okay. How then do I want to respond? What might it be like to respond as the river does, of, oh, I'm going to align these things so that there's a path where my life force can move through, right? The river, that's what the river does. The best way for my energy as the river to move is to line all these things up. So in our own lives, one of the ways in which we can create that path of imbrication, if that's the correct use of that word, is to really look at, where do we create our own impediments? Where do we make it harder for ourselves? Some of it is the conditioned thought, as I was saying before. Again, I think this way in which we can fight against how things are is so ingrained. At least I'll speak for myself. And then particularly with parenting, like, why can't it just work out? One, that old Zen story about the farmer, the horse runs away, and all his farmer friends are like, oh, it's too bad your horse ran away. And the farmer's like, I don't know. And the horse comes back with a friend. That's nice. And then the son gets on the horse that came back, and he breaks his leg. And all his friends are like, it's too bad that your son broke his leg. And the farmer's like, well, we don't know. Then the next day, the soldiers come and collect all the soldiers, but the son can't go because his leg was broken. We just don't know. We think we know, but we really don't. And being able to have that longer term lens of, oh, right now I know, and how it is in this day or that day, it doesn't seem like it's working out, but we don't really know. And fun to sort of be, again, kind of in the geology where we're talking eons of geologic time, we don't know. And can we maintain a sense of open-handedness? Well, we really don't know. Gil Fronsdale, when he teaches about equanimity, he'll often once I heard him say this notion of, okay, what's next? It's like this, exhale. Okay, what's next? Which requires or invites in a sense of one, ease, of not fighting, which those are not synonymous. There's one, being at ease with things is one way. Not fighting is another. And I want to, like, make that clear, that it's not like, oh, just let go and just be at ease with it. It's not so easy, right? But where we can catch ourselves fighting, and the fighting can just be like, I don't like this. Yeah. Honoring that I don't like it as one of the Vedanas, the second foundations of mindfulness, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. I like it, I don't like it. It's built in. We're hardwired to have that response, whether we have it consciously or unconsciously. Okay, great. We just note it. I don't like it. This is unpleasant. Okay. Can we sort of ease our way into the dislike, as opposed to, I don't like it, and therefore I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to complain about this, I'm going to all that chatter that then comes as a form of fighting how it is, as opposed to settling down with, oh, this is unpleasant. Okay. can we allow the attention to get nuanced? Well, what's unpleasant? The sensation, the mind response, the story? What is it? Yeah. I do have some poems that I want to share. Well, this one called Waterfall by Loris Dorothy Edmond. I do not ask for youth, nor for delay in the rising of time's irreversible river that takes the jeweled arc of the waterfall in which I glimpse minute by glinting minute, all that I have and all that I'm always losing, as sunlight lights each drop fast, fast falling. I do not dream that you, young again, might come to me darkly in love's green darkness where the dust of the bracken spices in the air moss crushed, give out astringent sweetness and water holds our reflection motionless as if forever. It is enough now to come into a room and find the kindness we have for each other, calling it love in eyes that are shrewd, but trustful still, face chastened by years of careful judgments, to sit in the afternoons and mid conversations without nostalgia. But when you leave me with your jauntiness, sinewed by resolution more than strength, suddenly then I love you with the quick intensity, remembering that water, however luminous and grand, falls fast and only once to the dark pool below. And it is almost at our peril that we deny this natural force of it falls and it goes. We are born and we die. We are a part of the system that is always moving. Even in times in our lives, we're like, oh my gosh, I am so stuck, right? The obstacle is the way. That stuckness that can some of us have shared in the group, and we know like this can go on for years. Yes, and when we allow again the attention to get more precise, more subtle, more nuanced, there's movement. And what are the stories we're telling ourselves about how stuck we are? As one way, another way of, can I stand in that underneath that waterfall that flows? Can I stand in the river that's always moving? Can I align my life force with the flow that is inherent in this physical form and is all around us in the water that's moving? The earth is 78% earth water. And this, again, aligning ourselves with this element of water as an expression of equanimity, I can move with this. Even when it's hard, unpleasant, even when we're grief-struck, can I stay in a sense of flow with this? From David White's Seven Streams. Come down drenched at the end of May with a cold rain so far into your bones that nothing will warm you except your own walking, and let the sun come out at the day's end by Sylvan Dasha with the rainbows doubling over Mullach Moor and see your clothes steaming in the bright air. Be a provenance of something gathered, a summation of previous intuitions. Let your vulnerabilities walking on the cracked sliding limestone be this time, not a weakness, but a faculty for understanding what's about to happen. Stand above the seven streams, letting the deep down current surface around you, then branch and branch as they do back into the mountain. And if you were able for that flow, say the few necessary words and walk on broader and cleansed for having imagined. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And we'll see how this goes, but I want to end by kind of, there's two parts here, if you're willing to come along with me. So imagine we're walking along together along the banks of the Salmon River, and we look out and we see this division of the waters around this, I'll call it the Pebble Island. And imagine, if you can, in your mind's eye, this imbrication of pebbles that are all lined themselves up for the water to flow most easily. Again, that the water has created this flow of ease. and to consider in your own life a particular challenge or knot, as in K-N-O-T-T, knottiness in our lives, or janglingness, whether it's internal, part of an internal weather pattern, or more relational, or we're seeing it with somebody else or in a work situation. What might it be like to yield to the power of our own life force to arrange a path of least resistance through this challenge? This is not to diminish the challenge. This is to trust, have faith and confidence in our capacity to meet the situation with a sense of flow and efficiency, that the energy, the parami, the heart's perfection of energy is most wisely invested in creating this place of flow. Imagine that we are able to imbricate the challenges such that there's a pathway through. Yeah. And how might it feel to align yourself with that path of ease, of flow? Feeling the water element, the gift of the water element in our own form as it flows is life-giving. Our own life force has the capacity to move like the water, to imbricate these challenges. For a sense of relative ease and smoothness. And then to walk down the river with me just a little bit more. It bends to the right. And there's an old concertina bridge that we can cross, that's totally safe, over to the other side, such that we can walk with ease up this goat path I mentioned to the cave, to take in the spectacular waterfall where it seems the individual drops are so clearly perceptible as it cascades 800 feet or so down, collects in the pond, and then continues on to the river. And we walk together in a line to stand under this waterfall, to stand in that sense of flow and release, to feel a part of this dynamic water flow that's moving and cleansing and blessing, allowing you to release that which does not serve, to drink in that which does serve. Yeah. This water blessing you, coming from above, flowing back to the river. And imagine again, we're in this line, we go back down after you've had your time of blessing and rinsing and cleansing, to stand together along the banks of the river. May each of us live as the river does, surprised by its own unfolding. Can we cherish and be surprised by and blessed by the unfolding of our own lives? Thank you for your kind attention. I'm going to stop there. And thanks for letting me share that part of our trip. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org. www.mindfulnessmedicine.org/donate.